Welcome to In the Circle, the premier softball podcast. Here are your hosts, Eric Lopez and Victor Anderson.
And welcome to another edition of In the Circle. Eric Lopez here alongside Victor Anderson. And this will be a fun one as we will break down postseason aspirations, both in Division One and Division Two. We'll talk about who's going to be possibly in Division One, the field of 64, and a developing storyline that's developing in Division One that could divide the sport. We'll also give you the breakdown on the regional rankings in Division Two, and boy, it's a doozy. But before we get into that, Vic, tell the audience where they can find our work.
You can follow our blog, inthecircleblog.wordpress.com. That's where we have the projections for Division One. And then the next week, I will give my thoughts on who will be hosting in Division Two, all eight regions. That's coming up next week. Of course, you can subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic and iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, InTheCircleSB, and send us an email, InTheCircleSB@gmail.com. So where should we start today?
And this, of course, podcast is on the blog of my field of 64, which we'll get into in a little bit. But first, hot off the presses, the latest Division II rankings in regional rankings are out. And obviously, we focus on the South region.
Yes, we do.
Now, Vic has not seen the rankings.
No,
he has avoided the social media. He's avoided the sites, and I told him on purpose to do that. Yes. I will announce this to him, and so you will get his actual initial reaction to this. There will be no editing of this.
No. So, although, depending on the words I might say, we may have to tweak it a little bit.
So what I will do, I will go from 10 to 1. And you're going to get your reaction.
Okay, and I'm going to give you, matter of fact, I'm going to tell you who I think is going to be number 10. You tell me who's number 10. How about that?
Now, do you have your own top 10?
Well, I have an idea, but for the integrity and purity of this podcast, I think number 10, thinking about happened last week, I'm going to say Mississippi College is number 10.
The team that's ranked number 10 in the South region. The Tampa. Tampa is ranked number 10 in the rankings. The team that could be winning the Sunshine State Conference at the end of this weekend, Vic.
Well, run that by me one more time.
Tampa is ranked number 10. The Tampa Spartans out of the Sunshine State Conference.
So Tampa won the series 2 out of 3, and they're dropped to 2 spots?
Yep. Well, they lost 2 out of 3.
Oh, yeah, you're right. They lost 2 out of 3.
To Eckerd, still.
Yes, but still.
Yep.
Now, this is interesting because, and we're going to, it probably tells me somebody who had a pretty good weekend moved up in the rankings. But, so essentially, for those of you who don't follow the Sunshine State Conference, St. Leo and Tampa, they're tied at 15-9 one weekend series ago. St. Leo hosts Rollins. And then Tampa takes on Florida Southern. Tampa holds the tiebreaker by sweeping St. Leo in St. Leo a couple of weeks ago. So essentially, Eric, if Tampa doesn't win the conference and gets the auto bid, they're out. And it's not even close.
Pretty remarkable. Certainly development in that situation. A lot of pressure on Tampa to win this weekend and win the automatic bid because that could be it.
Yes.
So they're number 10. Who's number 9?
Well, if Mississippi College is number 10, I think they'll be number 9.
Nope. Shorter is ranked number 9 in the rankings.
And they were previously number 7 in the rankings, so they fell down 2 spots.
Correct. The aforementioned Mississippi College is number 8 ranking.
Now, the 8th ranking is important because the South has 3 regions, the Gulf South, the Sunshine State Conference, and the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. The SIAC champ is going to get the number 8 seed. So you want to be in the top 7 that Eric will reveal to me in just a moment to make sure that you're good. Or if you get an automatic bid in one of the 3 conferences, your ticket is punched. You don't have to worry about it on a selection Monday.
At number 7. Fresh off a 2 out of 3 win over St. Leo, Palm Beach Atlantic.
I'm not really surprised about that. And we talked about it, Eric, when we were traveling back from Tampa last weekend. If they can win that series versus St. Leo, get 2 out of 3, I think they will move up in the rankings. And I think the committee rewarded Palm Beach Atlantic for, number 1, playing a brutal road schedule and getting wins against Tampa and getting 2 out of 3 to series victory versus St. Leo. It's going to be important for Palm Beach Atlantic to finish the season on a high note. They end the season versus Lynn, a team that's been very scrappy. And if Palm Beach Atlantic, if they can sweep Lynn, I think their bid could be good. But as a gentleman who was in a position like this a few years ago, nothing is certain until your name shows up on that selection show.
At number 6, Valdosta State.
Well, Valdosta State is one of those teams where they need to play very well in the conference tournament in the Gulf South Conference. This is a Valdosta State team that was in the top 10 at one point, but the pitching, which was very young, has really bit them. So they're having to win a lot of slugfests, kind of like what Rollins has had to do in this year. But if there's any team that I think can battle their way back and make it to the postseason, it's Coach Thomas Massera and Valdosta State.
At number 5, North Alabama.
The defending national champions are back in form. They got a 1-2 combination of Cox and Carpenter. I really think North Carolina is peaking. North Alabama is peaking at the right time. And oh, by the way, folks, as I mentioned, they are the reigning defending national champions. So you don't want to see North Alabama in a 4 or 5 spot. And I feel bad for the team that you're going to announce as number 4, because that might be a heck of a first round matchup.
Do you want to take a guess?
Alabama Huntsville.
No, it's Lee.
Ooh,
at number 4.
Now Lee is in their first year of membership as a full-fledged Division II member, which means they are eligible for postseason. And the last time a team in the Gulf South Conference made it into the postseason in the first year of Division II, 2 years ago with Shorter, and all Shorter did was make it to the Division II Women's College World Series. Lee is a program that is on the rise, and I think Lee is surprising a lot of people and could be a threat in that regional in a few weeks.
Number 3 is Alabama Huntsville.
No surprise, Les Studeman and company, another offensive juggernaut for the season for the Chargers. And a matter of fact, I think I know who number 1 and number 2 are.
And they are?
St. Leo will be number 2.
And your number 1?
West Florida.
The team that's ranked number 2, West Florida. Back in number 1 for the second consecutive week, St. Leo. That's your top 10. So again, to recap, St. Leo, number 1, who may not win their Sunshine State Conference automatic bid, but they're number 1. West Florida is number 2. Alabama Huntsville is number 3. Lee is number 4. Number 5, North Alabama. Number 6, Valdosta State. Number 7, Palm Beach Atlantic. Number 8, Mississippi College. Number 9, Shorter. And number 10, Tampa. Your reaction?
Wow.
You're stunned.
I am stunned.
St. Leo team that lost 2 out of 3 to Palm Beach Atlantic got swept by Tampa the weekend before that.
Yeah.
And clearly they have a big gap there.
And here's the problem. Here's the problem with St. Leo. We saw them on this downward trajectory last year. They were red hot. They were 34-1. They were clicking on all cylinders. Then they got swept in senior day by Palm Beach Atlantic, went to Rollins, lost 2 out of 3, and they got eliminated in Florence in the South 1 Regional by North Alabama. And if they ain't careful, it could be the same situation. They go on again. They play Rollins this weekend. Rollins understands they're in a role that they haven't been in a while. Spoiler. And you know they will love nothing more than to ruin the last weekend of those Lions seniors and send them possibly tumbling out of position to host just like they did last year.
They're assuming that, but they're run down number 1.
I know. And the thing is, I feel that they have had such a strong schedule and such a strong regional resume. They have 2 wins over Armstrong and Atlanta. They're top 5 in the nation. We mentioned the victory. We mentioned their victory. Their strong non-conference regional record. But the thing that bothers me is that, do they have anybody behind Atkins to be that number 2? They had to bail last year to be that number 2. Right now it's all on Atkins. And you know, and the thing is, they got a freshman in Casey Kelly who's probably going to be freshman of the year for the Lions in the second consecutive year. They've had that honor. They have Samantha Omi. They have a great lineup, 1 through 9. But if they can't hit and Atkins has a bad day, they could be prime. And the thing that bothers me is that they lose to a team in Tampa. They got swept by Tampa. Granted, two games were in extra innings, but you lose to a Tampa team who has their number. You go on the road, you lose in a walk-off, you give a 4-7 to Palm Beach Atlantic, you split the doubleheader to lose the series, so you lost 5 of your last 6. You now go home to take on Rollins, and now all the pressure's on you because you essentially need to win and get help to win the conference championship and get the automatic bid. Now, St. Leo's in. Tampa, on the other hand, they're the desperate team. Because if they sweep Florida Southern, they get the automatic bid. No questions about it. But if they don't get the automatic bid, they're out.
Pretty wild. And you'll see St. Leo up close in person this weekend. Number one ranked St. Leo in the South region. So,
and here's something to consider, Eric.
Yeah.
Shorter, who you mentioned, they didn't qualify for the Gulf South tournament. They're out. So Shorter's out of consideration. Lee may qualify for the tournament. Mississippi College qualify for the tournament. So how the conference tournament goes will be intriguing to see and how things will play out. Now, keep in mind, seeding is still in flux. And
so based on these rankings right now, project to me who would make the field.
Well, I got right now, I'm presuming you get 2 from the Sunshine State Conference with St. Leo and Tampa getting the automatic bid.
So you're projecting Tampa to get the automatic bid?
Yes.
And getting in that way.
I think Palm Beach Atlantic gets in. Remember, they're a provisional member. And then you got the SIAC champion. That's 4. And then you got 4 bids from the Gulf South. So my 4 from the Gulf South are Alabama Huntsville, West Florida, North Alabama, and Valdosta.
So repeat that again for the audience.
I have Alabama Huntsville. I have West Florida. And it is the thing is, Valdosta, they can play their way into the championship, or they could be 0-2 in barbecue. At the time of this recording, they're 33-16, 18-12 in conference. Lead 33-14, 19-10 in conference. So I'm so torn, right? You know what? As of right now, the recording of this podcast, I have Alabama Huntsville, West Florida, North Alabama, and people in Valdosta aren't going to lie to me when I say this, Lee.
Whoa!
Those are my 4 right now.
And they will join St. Leo?
Yes, Tampa.
Tampa, because Palm Beach Atlantic.
And then the SIAC champion, whoever gets the bid for that bid.
Who's up for that?
You have Miles. You have Claflin, who is in consideration. It's gonna be an interesting.
So who's the team that's rooting against Tampa this weekend the most, other than St. Leo? But who is the team that needs Tampa not to get that automatic bid?
Palm Beach Atlantic. Say Palm Beach Atlantic. I'll probably have to say Shorter, Valdosta State. But remember, Shorter more than Valdosta State because Shorter season's done.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to get in if their games are done at this point. I think Valdosta is probably the one. It's going to be tricky. It's going to be tricky in that South region. And I tell you, the rankings tell me there's not a lot of respect for the Sunshine State League.
Well, as I mentioned, it's a down year. It's a down year for the league as a whole. Look at the standings.
It's got to be hard, though. How do you explain to Tampa they swept St. Leo and they're not even, like, they have to win the league to get in, even though they swept the team that's going to get in?
Look.
Who's the number one ranked team in the region?
Yeah, and they swept them on the road.
Very bizarre.
And it tells you, and I think the committee is valuing the fact that Tampa had a weaker out of regional schedule than what St. Leo did.
Oh, there's no question. That's a part of it. But still, just very bizarre.
Yeah.
In the South region.
But you know what? If Tampa wins the automatic bid, it's a moot point. And teams like Valdosta State and Palm Beach Atlantic, they're going to be the ones that are going to be sweating. Because Tampa's got their ticket to the dance, and you don't say
what if Valdosta wins the tournament, conference tournament?
I think Valdosta State, if they make it to at least the semifinals, I think they'll be in. I'll talk about it more next week we know what the tournament field will be for the Gulf South and what the rankings will be.
Other notes, we're going to kind of breeze through the rest of the regions and get your thoughts, Vic. Let's go through the Southeast region. I will go through the 10 and your reaction. North Georgia is ranked number 1.
No surprise, 4 straight Peach Belt championship for Mike Davenport and
company. Armstrong State, who have you mentioned, number 2. Limestone, number 3. Carson Newman, number 4. Lenoir Rhyne.
Lenoir Rhyne, yes.
They're ranked fifth in the Southeast region. Young Harris is sixth. Pfeiffer, number seven. Flagler, you got to see Flagler.
Well, actually, no, we didn't. They got rained out.
Oh, well, you would have. They're number eight. Have. Georgia College is number nine. And Anderson.
Not this Anderson.
From South Carolina, that is. Yes. Is ranked number 10 in the Southeast. Anything jumps out
not
there?
Not really surprising. North Georgia, Armstrong, 1-2. Don't be surprised if they end up in a Southeast Super Regional showdown.
South Central region, Angelo State is number one.
Number one team in all the land. No, number one top five teams in all the land.
West Texas A&M, number two.
My coach Blackowski and company, former guest of the podcast.
St. Mary's of Texas, number three. Mm-hmm. Colorado Mesa, number four. Cameron, number five. Texas is women's.
Texas Women's University.
Wow. Number six, Tarleton State is number seven. Lubbock Christian, number eight. Texas A&M Commerce, number nine. And the Colorado School of Mines?
Yeah, Colorado School of Mines.
10.
Well, I think West Texas A&M, and we had Coach Blakowski on before the season. He knew this was going to be a tough region. They're in position to be a super regional host, and we saw how well that served them last year, and hoping to make it to Salem for 2017.
Certainly will be very interesting, to say the least. You've got the West region.
West side.
You got Cal State Monterey Bay, number one. Dixie State, number two. Central Washington, number three. Sonoma State, number four. Chico State, number five. Cal State San Bernardino, number six. California.
Yep, San Bernardino.
Thank you. California Baptist, number seven. Humboldt State, number eight. Weren't they number one for a while?
Humboldt State, they were a preseason number one, but they have just fallen on hard time.
Azusa Pacific, number nine, and UC San Diego.
Wait, time out. Did you say Humboldt State?
Yeah.
Humboldt State?
Yeah.
What are they ranked?
Eight.
The number nine, are you talking about eighth in the region?
Yes. In the West.
They're number nine in the country.
Explain that to me. I got the sheet of paper.
I can explain common sense.
Wait a minute. Are they in danger of missing this?
They better win the region. They better win the conference
tournament. How are you number eight in the region and you're ranked ninth in the country?
Your guess is as
well. Well, actually, I can't talk too much. There's a team in Division I that's kind of in a similar parallel, but we'll get into that later.
We'll get to that later on, sir. Move on. Let's talk. Why don't you talk about the mid? Actually, let's talk about the East region.
Well, I got the Atlantic in front of me here. Let me just go through the Atlantic. We got Westchester, number one. West Virginia, Westland, number two. Kutztown, number three.
Kutztown, who I saw play, very good team, very balanced pitching staff. I think they could make some noise.
Charleston, West Virginia, number four. Concord, number five. Shepherd, number six. UVA Wise, number seven. Bloomsburg, number eight. And Shippensburg, number nine.
I think Westchester is the class of that region. But Kutztown, I saw them play, split with Rollins earlier this year. Look for Kutztown to make a run to possibly do the Super Regionals even further this year.
Wow. Central region, Harding, number one in that region. Minnesota State, number two in the Central region. Central Oklahoma, number three. Winona State, number four. Southern Arkansas, number five. Pittsburgh State, number six. Augustana, number seven. You got Western State, number eight. Arkansas Monticello, number nine. Arkansas Tech, number 10.
I found it funny that the two teams that battled in the Super Regional, Southern Arkansas and Arkansas Tech, Southern Arkansas with Coach Anderson, they're number five. They're kind of in a safe position. Arkansas Tech on the outside looking in at number 10. So the Golden Suns need to make a strong run to get to the postseason.
East region, New Haven, number one. Adelphi, number two. Caldwell, number three. Mercy, number four. Molloy, number five. Wilmington, number six. Merrimack, number seven. Didn't you see Merrimack?
No, I saw the team at number 10.
NYIT is number eight. LIU Post, number nine. And Southern NH.
New Hampshire, that's the team I saw.
They're number 10.
Penman, super regional participant in the East region last year. So the Penman have some work to do that they want to make it back to the postseason for a fourth straight year, second time in super regionals.
And the final region, the Midwest, Southern Indiana, number one. Missouri St. Louis, number two. Saginaw Valley, number three. Program we know very well, U of Indy.
Yes.
Number four. Wayne State, number five. Rockhurst, number six. Truman, number seven. McKendree, number eight. Grand Valley State, And number 9 in Illinois, Springfield, number 10, rounding out the Midwest region.
No surprise that Missouri St. Louis is doing very well without Coach Brian Levin and Hannah Perriman, who have moved on after last season. And how about Grand Valley State and Coach Callahan getting themselves back up in that number 9 slot? Do I think that they make a deep run to the conference tournament, they'll creep themselves into that regional rankings. And, of course, next week I will provide to you who I think will make it into 64, who I think will host, and what fan bases will not be happy with me. Just like right now, there'll be a lot of fan bases will not be happy with my co-host, Eric Lopez.
Well, that's a good segue to Division One. Of course, we're down in Division One to a few weeks left in the regular season. As a matter of fact, we are down to 2 weeks left in the regular season, plus the conference tournament weekend for many of the conferences. So Selection Sunday just around the corner, and I finally have posted my field of 64, my first one. I'll do it multiple times. And, Vic, I could tell you honestly, I've been doing this now for a handful of years. This was by far the hardest projections that I've had to do in all my years of doing this. I think this is going to be one of the most complicated field of 64. I think it's a very divisive field of 64. I think we're headed for that if things do not change. And the reason is it centers around, I think, the storyline that's going to go into the field of 64 as of right now, and that is not only how many teams will the SEC get in, but will they get them all in? That's going to be the big question going into the field of 64. That is going to divide the audience, and that will be certainly fascinating to me.
Well, the thing is with the SEC, they have all 13 teams ranked inside the top 30 in the RPI. And the thing that a lot of people are going to worry, think about is, are you going to go? And it kind of piggybacks on what you've been talking about for the last few years when we talked about the podcast and when we talked about your bracketology. Are you valuing the resume? Are you valuing the RPI? Or are you valuing the name on the front of the jersey?
Well, that's going to be the interesting question. The SEC, all 13 teams are within the top 32 in RPI. Historically, that means they all get in. That's how the committee has done it, with an emphasis. The uniqueness of this is that Georgia has had some injuries in their pitching staff. They're 3-15 in the SEC, which is currently last place in the SEC. But
which means you don't get in the tournament.
No, everybody gets into the tournament now in the SEC. Yeah, okay. They changed that a couple years ago.
Okay.
So Georgia, but their RPI is still 28. And what's fascinating about the Georgia, and this is where the big conferences get into a little bit of a debate, it's an imbalanced schedule in the conference. And in Georgia's defense, they've had to go to LSU, they've had to go to Florida, they've had to go to Texas A&M, and they hosted Auburn. All right, so that's not an easy pecking order compared to other teams in the league that have avoided a Florida or avoided an A&M.
Yeah, what I don't understand is that if you're in divisions, why don't you play your?
Well, they're not in divisions.
I mean, I understand that, but keep the divisional like scheduling where you play everyone in your division, and then you have like crossover games. Because of that, you have that unbalanced schedule, where Georgia has that brutal road stretch where teams kind of like Texas A&M or South Carolina, they don't have to make those brutal road trips. Or if anything, they get those teams in their home ballparks.
Right. I mean, Texas A&M and Florida, for example, do not play this year, and they could be they're battling for the SEC championship. So that's going to be the big dilemma. And yet, if you look at the polls, Georgia's still ranked in the top 25 in both polls. So, and it goes back to, are the coaches voting for the jersey? Are they giving them a benefit of the doubt? Well, guess what? If you're giving them the benefit of the doubt, this is the team that could finish last place in the SEC. You know, that could influence the decision-making to getting Georgia in. And if Georgia gets in, then now you almost have to let everybody in the SEC. Mississippi State beat them head-to-head, for example. So this is going to be very interesting. Add to the fact that some of the other leagues across the country are a little down. There might create some spots that normally wouldn't be available. And if they do let all 13 in the SEC, at what whose expense that will be. So that's where we're going to have this big debate. You're going to be debating, do you put in the 12th place team or the 13th place team in the SEC as opposed to a third place team in Conference USA, which is what FIU is right now, or a team like SIUE.
Edwardsville.
Who is RPI at the recording of this is 39, but they're not winning their, right now they're not winning the regular season in the Ohio Valley. Jacksonville State is. In fact, they just got swept by Jacksonville State. And this is where the RPI is flawed. If you look at SIUE, you're like, well, why can't they get in with a 39 RPI? But if you look at their schedule, they played some quality opponents. They just didn't beat any of them.
Yeah.
So they don't have that marquee win. And that's what's kind of why I have them as the last team out. But that's going to be the center of this debate. Do you reward a team like SIU Edwardsville, who's having a good year, at the expense of Georgia, who has played a tougher schedule, and you know, without question. So,
you know how I compare SIU Edwardsville to? A couple years ago, we had this same debate with South Alabama.
Yeah.
Played a lot of teams in the SEC, high RPI.
Georgia State.
Georgia State. Another one. Yeah. Didn't have any wins. Didn't have any marquee wins.
Right. But, again, they have a good RPI. They played a right schedule. And that's the team. More and more teams are figured out the formula on how to kind of manipulate the RPI and play a schedule that doesn't hurt you. So it could benefit you even if you don't have the quality win. So that's the debate. That's going to be the debate that we're going to have this year unless it plays itself out. And what's interesting is in years past, we've had this conversation about the SEC before, but usually what happens is a team or two will fade. To the point where, like, for example, last year, Mississippi State faded to the point where they were not even 500, so it was a moot point. And teams would fade to the point where the RPI would fall apart. That hasn't happened yet, and that's going to be interesting. Now, Georgia, obviously, how do they finish in the year could play a role in that. In fact, I have them as the last team in, so by no means are they safe. And so that's going to be interesting. So that's going to be the big question. How many will the SEC get in? As of right now, I have them all in. I have them all in because I want to see the teams that right now I have outside grab it. I don't know if anybody has grabbed it yet. So I want to see somebody take it away from them, whether it be SIUE finishes strong, whether it be an FIU, whether it be USF, whether
Louisville
it be UCF.
Louisville had a shot early in the week versus Florida State.
And that's my point. They had an opportunity against Florida State and got swept. So their RPI is in the 54 range. That's concerning. So, you know, that's the thing. Who's going to take it?
Okay.
That's going to be the question. There are some people that think Oregon State should be in. They beat UCLA recently in the Pac-12. They're right in the bubble. So this is going to be very tricky because you have those bottom teams in the SEC that we've talked about. And the teams, Georgia, we've talked about a lot. But South Carolina is near the bottom. But South Carolina could tell you, hey, we just beat Florida State recently at home. And we've got one of the top schedules in the country.
That's their marquee win.
And they have a tough schedule. They've played this year. You have a Missouri in there in the mix. Arkansas is trying to crack in there and get to the field of 64. They just lost 2 out of 3 to Mississippi State. I think Mississippi State's playing themselves in there. I think they're fine. But that's going to be the dilemma. Those teams in the bottom that have a lot of losses, you know, will the committee justify that at the expense of others? Or will some teams get hot from other conferences that will take some of the bids? That's going to be very fascinating and a very complicated situation for this committee because what's going to happen is, if they put everybody in the SEC, there's going to be a lot of yelling and screaming of how, you know, what, why are you doing that? What, the sport is too SEC centric. What does that mean long term? If you're not a Power 5 school, if they don't get everybody in the SEC, then teams are going to say, well, wait a minute, we're getting punished because we're playing the best teams in the country while other teams don't. So it's
a Pandora's box, essentially.
It really is. No, it really is. I really do. Look, I've been very critical of the committee in the past. I don't envy their job this year.
No.
I do not envy their job this year.
Because somebody's going to end up being upset and a lot louder and a lot more than usual.
I think you can make an argument for about 70 to 72 teams that could get into the field of 64. I really do believe that. I mean, there's teams I left out in this initial blog that certainly are still in the race. So, you know, for example, I think USF's playing very good right now. If UCF can get hot, I still believe the American with USF and UCF, if one of them can get hot, finish second in the league, get to the championship game in the tournament, they could sneak in into that bid. FIU, if they have a good conference tournament and get to the final, they could be in the mix. So that's why this thing is far from over, but it's going to be very interesting to see how these teams play out moving forward here in the next few weeks are critical games. What was your thoughts? You saw the blog. You go ahead. Now it's your turn to pepper me with questions. Now, what you thought?
The first thing I noticed in regards to the lower majors, you got 3 from the East Sun.
Yep.
And not one of them is North Florida. So you have UFC.
Correct.
You have USC Upstate.
Yep.
You have Kennesaw State.
Yep.
And Lipscomb.
Correct. I mean, UNF's RPI is in the 70s. They got some bad losses there. They're going to have to win the conference tournament more than likely to get in. They're in the mix for the regular season title. Had a tough loss against Stetson over the weekend that they could have swept them. But, you know, Upstate right now is winning the regular season, so I'm kind of projecting them to win the league. And then Lipscomb and Kennesaw State, that's going to, again, this is going to be the debate. Do you put in a Kennesaw State or Lipscomb at the expense of a Georgia or South Carolina? Now, I have fit them all in there, but I could see a scenario where they might be battling against each other. What's interesting about the A-Sun, and people are not aware of this, the A-Sun right now, and it's neck and neck. I mean, it's a tie. They're basically tied for the fourth best conference in college softball.
As a matter of, funny you should mention that because I have the rankings right
Go
here.
Ahead.
Well, we have the SEC 1, Pac-12 2, Big 12 3. You have the ACC 4, the NEA-Sun.
Yeah.
Sun Belt, the Big 10 with a down year. There's 7. Yeah, Mountain West, Big West, American, and Conference.
Well, that's they've updated that a little bit in that the Americans moved up to 9 in the most recent one. That was from last week.
Okay.
But the A-Sun's right there with the ACC battling for 4 and 5 in the conference. Point is, the A-Sun's had a good year from a conference RPI standpoint. So that's why I have them with 3 teams. However, that could change. Kennesaw State and Lipscomb have a series to play late still to go. How do these teams do in the conference tournament? So, could I see them being at 3? Yeah, but I could also see them dropping to 2. And then you mentioned it, UNF. What if UNF were to win the conference tournament? I think that would be at the expense of somebody else in the A-Sun. I don't think if a UNF or somebody else wins the conference tournament in the A-Sun, for example,
okay,
that it would be at the expense of a Power 5.
Okay.
I think they would. And you've seen this in basketball where they'll just replace a team in that league.
Okay. So it sounds to me the max you got for the A-Sun is 3.
Correct.
Okay.
2 to 3, and it depends on how everything else goes. Yes.
Now, Big Ten, you have 5 in the Big Ten, and not really anybody else contending for an at-large spot.
Yeah, I mean, pretty clear cut. Wisconsin just played Michigan very well. I think took a game from them. They're certainly the 5th team right now in the Big Ten. Ohio State's kind of slipping a little bit, but they still have a good RPI. Minnesota, to me, is the question with Minnesota will be they're going to win the Big Ten. Not only will they host a regional, the question is, can they put themselves in the top 8 to host the regional, the super regional? I personally think they should. I have them a little higher than the committee did. The committee came out with their top 10. I thought Minnesota should be higher. And then Michigan's kind of the wild card in all this. Michigan right now is a 20 in RPI. They wouldn't, you know, I think they got to win the Big Ten tournament to have a shot to host. If not, man, somebody's going to get a Michigan in their regional as a 2 seed. With Megan Betsa.
which ain't gonna be. You know, which you don't really don't want those problems.
Correct. And that's gonna be very interesting. So I think and Illinois quietly has had a heck nice year for the Fighting Illini. So yeah, I think the Big Ten feels pretty good at 5. I think Wisconsin and Ohio State's got to make sure they keep playing. But I feel pretty good about the 5 in the Big Ten this year.
So it sounds to me that Big Ten, unless somebody outside of those 5. Get themselves into the Big Ten tournament of wins.
Right.
That's the max.
I think so. Yeah, I feel pretty comfortable in that as of now. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to a conference that you know very well, the ACC. Of course, you have Florida State, you have Notre Dame, and North Carolina.
Yeah.
It's a down year for the ACC.
It is a weird year in that standpoint. Pittsburgh, which got off to a hot start this year in the first month of the season, has struggled in the conference. They've struggled. They still have a good RPI, but they're only 2 games over 500, and they're near the bottom in the ACC. Boston College has had a nice year, but they've had some bad losses in midweeks. Their RPI kind of shows that. You know, and then Louisville is a team that's right in the mix. But their RPI is 54, and they, like you said, they had a chance against Florida State, didn't get a win, and again, they got some bad losses themselves. It's a weird year in the ACC. Pittsburgh really disappointed the league. They got off to a great start in that first month and have kind of faded. You got teams like Syracuse that's moving up, but it's just all muddled right now.
And you know with this league more than anybody, around the tournament, it's always that one team that we're not talking about that comes out of nowhere,
sure,
wins the automatic bid, and they make some noise in the regionals. So.
Well, that's the thing. A Boston College could still play themselves in. Louisville could still play themselves in. I mean, it's not edged in stone. I just think right now I feel like Carolina, Notre Dame, and Florida State feel pretty right now are the secure picks from the ACC.
Yeah, and really, there's not much else in regards to drama. You got 7 for the Pac-12.
Oregon State's the one team right now that's not in. They have an RPI of 47. They did beat UCLA for the first time, 2 out of 3. That's what they could hold their hat on right now, but they still got some work to do.
Sunbelt, you got 2, Lafayette and Texas State.
I think the big question there is, you know, if you look at the regional hosting, which I projected, I think there's really only 1 to 2 spots available, in my opinion. I think there's 14 locks of teams that are going to host regionals. I think Utah, if they keep playing the way they are and they have the facilities to host, I think they're going to host, because I could see a BYU be put right there too. Utah BYU regional.
Yes, by the way, if BYU makes it, it'll be a Thursday, Friday, Saturday regional.
Right. So I could see that very easily, and then you only have to have 2 flights into Utah. So that's one spot that could be taken. And then the other one, I think, is between James Madison and Louisiana Lafayette. You know, does the committee give a non-Power 5 a chance to host? They've given both of them a chance to host the last couple of years in James Madison's case, and obviously a handful of years in Lafayette. Lafayette's coming on. They just beat Texas A&M recently in College Station, which boosted them big time. So that's a debate. Kentucky's in the mix, but are you really going to give another SEC team a chance to host? The argument to give Kentucky a chance to host is, if Kentucky finishes strong, you could put a Michigan there, which is a bus ride, and if Louisville gets hot, you could put a Louisville in there. I mean, that's how some of this stuff works.
That's right.
So you look at the hosting, I think it's between Madison, Louisiana Lafayette, Michigan, and Kentucky for 1, maybe 2 spots, assuming if Utah can't host, then that could open up a second spot. I feel like the other 14 sites that I mentioned in the blog are pretty much close to locks to host.
So that sounds to me that LSU, who you have as a 15 national seed, they're good to host.
As of right now, I mean, unless they somehow fall apart at the end and don't, you know, but I don't see that happening. I think they're going to host. They've got too good of a resume. You know, but if you're LSU, you're trying to hope that you maybe improve on that RPI as far as that seeding purposes are concerned.
Now, I'm noticing who you have in your regionals, the 16 regions. You have Florida, the number one national seed, and then Arizona, Florida State, Texas A&M, Washington, Minnesota, Tennessee, Oregon. They will be the 8 seeds that will host regionals and super regionals if it gets to
Correct. And obviously the controversy is going to be, I don't have Auburn in there. I know the committee likes Auburn at 5. I don't. And let's be, they've had some discretions there with suspensions. The players are back from suspensions, which is a whole other story. I just don't think Auburn's a top 8 team. I just don't. And I don't think they should be hosting both the regional and super regional. And I have them hosting, but I think they have them drop down to 11. They could certainly play themselves back in, but it's tight in the SEC between Auburn, Alabama. You got LSU. Kentucky. You know, Tennessee's red hot.
I think you have Tennessee comfortably in to host and possibly hosting a super number.
That's what they're in the mix for. They're definitely going to host. It's just a question of, do they host the super regionals? Obviously, Tennessee and Florida, big series this weekend for the SEC title, could be on the line there with A&M in the mix. So if you look at the SEC hosting, you got Florida, A&M, Tennessee, Auburn, Alabama, LSU, right? That's for the 6 I have?
Six.
Am I missing anybody? Make sure.
Is down for considering. You have Florida as the number 1 seed. You got Texas A&M as the 4. Tennessee the 7. Auburn the 11. Alabama 13. LSU 15. And you have Kentucky.
Who could play themselves into a 7th host? They could get themselves in there.
That's the only one, Kentucky.
They just swept Missouri. So it wouldn't be that crazy if they gave it to Kentucky in that regard.
Okay, so let me give you this. Over under six SEC teams hosting regionals.
I mean, you can't put anything behind them but pass them on it. And here's the thing. A lot of it's going to depend on how many teams get into the field. Do they get all of them in? Well, if you get them all in, I mean, that's tricky. Then you might have to have 7 hosts. I mean, that's good. It's going to be very interesting. It's very interesting to see. I think you have to. I think 6 is a good number. But, you know, I was proven wrong in the past that they tend to go more than that. I think they went 7 last year, if I'm not mistaken. Georgia hosted, which surprised a lot of people last year. So, we'll see. I'm going to say 6 right now, but certainly Kentucky can play themselves in. Maybe somebody plays themselves out. I mean, LSU certainly has got we'll see how that walk-off win against Tennessee kind of builds a momentum here to finish the year strong. But we'll see. But, it's going to be very interesting at the back end, I think, to host. But I feel strongly about the 13, 14 teams that I mentioned as far as hosting.
So it sounds like up to Alabama at that 13 national seed, they're good for hosting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then later. It's going to be between Utah, LSU, James Madison, and Lafayette, Michigan, Kentucky.
And again, I feel good about Utah and LSU, especially if you can Utah host. Now, they got to finish strong. They have. They got some great wins this year in the Pac-12. They're right at the top. They don't get the respect because of their brand name.
Oh, by the way, Utah went to the Super Bowl last year. And
they went to the Super Bowl last year.
In Tallahassee, so.
They beat Arizona 2 out of 3. I mean, if like I said, I think if you change their name to Arizona State, I don't even think we'd be having this conversation.
Nope.
So, but I think they should host if they have. I don't know their facility situation, but I would assume they could host. LSU could host, obviously. So I think they will, so at least the regional, maybe not the super regional, but certainly that's the case. So we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, again, teams can play themselves in. I mean, the American Conference, we mentioned it. USF, UCF, I think, could get back in the conversation and get into the field if they have a strong finish. Same in Conference USA. FIU's in the mix because, you know, I think the committee would like to have one of those teams, FIU, UCF, USF, one of those teams get hot so they can bust them to Gainesville.
A tradition unlike any other.
No, I mean, I'm serious about that. Because with Florida State, what's going to happen with Florida State is they're going to get an SEC team in there. It could be Georgia. It could be Mississippi State.
It could be South Carolina.
Which they've done the last 3 years with South Carolina.
It could be Arkansas.
Right. And then they could put in a 2 seed there that, you know, they could flop bus in from somewhere else or whatever. So I don't think they'll need another Florida team per se in FSU. The other team we haven't mentioned is FAU, by the way. They could put FAU in Tallahassee or Gainesville again. So those are another couple of things to keep in mind. FAU, I have them in right now as the second team out of Conference USA. What's interesting about them is, do they go back to Gainesville, which they've been now 2 years in a row? Do they send them there for a third year in a row? Do they send them a little bit further to Tallahassee? I don't know. They could do either way. But, you know, FAU's RPI right now is
FAU RPI for the Owls, it is 41.
Which is kind of a 3 seed right now. It's kind of a 3 seed. So maybe they... committee decides, we know what, if UCF and USF and FIU aren't good enough to make the field, we'll just put FAU as a 3 in Gainesville and put somebody else in as a 2, maybe a North Carolina, for example, who could bust probably to Gainesville. So they could do that and then put an SEC team with FSU with somebody else, maybe a team from the A-Sun or vice versa. So
Kennesaw State.
Somebody, right. Whoever can make it.
Although Lipscomb, if they make it, it'll probably be in Knoxville.
I agree with that. Upstate could be another, you know, so that's kind of how this is kind of playing itself out from that standpoint. It's what do they want to do with FAU? But certainly if an FIU gets hot and gets in, they could slide them into Gainesville, maybe slide FAU to Tallahassee. They could do that as well. So a lot of games to be played, but that's how some of this stuff works out, unfortunately, sometimes.
That's the dominoes falling where they may.
Yeah, and you know, people are asking me about the committee's top 10. Do you have now the committee's top 10? And Vic, you could pull it up.
Yes, I do.
I don't have a problem with Florida number 1. Obviously, I don't have a problem with number 2, Arizona. You go ahead, read off the committee's initial.
Well, after Florida and Arizona, you have Texas A&M, Florida State.
Yeah, let me address that. You could go either way there. I you know, if you want to tell me that you're going with A&M over Florida State because they beat them head to head up in. Mary Nutter in February, I guess I'll buy it. I just think Florida State, I just think FSU is a better, I think they're a top 3 team, and I don't, they shouldn't be punished based on if the ACC is down or whatever, but that's a flip of a coin. I mean, A&M is very good as well.
Now, where you have issues is 5-7. You have Auburn 5, Washington 6, Oregon 7. They have Minnesota, Tennessee, UCLA rounding out the top 10.
Right, and I don't have Auburn there. I just don't think they're a top 8 team.
Okay, so if you were to commit to
I think they're a 10 or 11 team, and that's fine. I'm not saying they're not in the mix for the top 8, but, you know, you look at the SEC race right now. They're what, 4th in the SEC? They're 4th in the SEC. I don't even think they're better than Tennessee, and yet they're ahead of Tennessee in the rankings? You know? So that's a little peculiar. I think Washington's better than Auburn. I think Minnesota's better than Auburn. That's why I have those two teams up.
I trust their pitching more.
Yeah.
Both of those teams.
Yeah. You know, Oregon's interesting. They've kind of hit the skids a little bit after being undefeated for so long this year. They lost at UCLA 2 out of 3. They lost 2 out of 3 to Arizona, nothing to be ashamed of, but they have hit the skids a little bit in the Pac-12. So, but I've got them, what, 8? So, and then, you know, UCLA, you know, that's about right. Yeah, we're pulling hairs. Tennessee's right there. They could certainly play themselves into the top eight if they win the SEC and continue this tremendous play that they have with that young team. So, but yeah, I don't think Auburn, feel like Auburn's getting a bit of it, more of a benefit of the doubt. But we'll see. They could certainly play themselves in. But I just think there's more teams that are better than them, in my opinion. But, you know, I understand where the committee's coming from. I can't yell at them too much. I like the concept, by the way, that they're announcing this early. And they're going to do it. They're going to do it again real soon. So I think that's good, at least from the standpoint that people maybe don't get thrown off. Sometimes it's happened in the past.
As a matter of fact, their next reveal is going to be on Saturday, May the 6th.
Yep.
During Auburn, Alabama, the softball version of the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, and that could be big. I mean, that's a big series, obviously. That's what I mean. I mean, that's the thing. Just because I have Auburn at 11, that doesn't mean they can't wait play themselves back into the top eight, top five. And those are my opinion, obviously, not the committee. So that's just where we differ. But that's okay. You know, as Bill Walton used to say, if everybody's thinking alike, nobody's thinking. Exactly. So,
And you know what the crazy thing is? We've gone 45 minutes into this podcast, and we have now started to mention the defending national champion, Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, you know, that's the other one. I'm glad you brought them up. Oklahoma, it feels a lot like the year, it was 2014, I believe, was the year after the national title, where they didn't get a top eight seed. They got put with Alabama in the Supers. They had to go to Alabama. I believe they were at 11 that year.
That was a crazy. Probably you. I remember you telling me about that region, a super regional. Probably one of the greatest regionals ever played.
Yeah, and Oklahoma is certainly the pre-conference. Maybe I would argue sleptwalked through some of those games and maybe didn't get up for it. I mean, they lost to Cal Poly a couple times, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's what's hurting them. But again, they're the best team in the Big 12, which right now is the third best conference in college softball, according to the RPI. So you're sending me mixed messages. And they just beat a very good Baylor team, 2 out of 3. So I think Oklahoma should be a lot closer to the top eight than I think the committee. In fact, I have them where? Where did I?
You have them 9.
Yeah.
You will have a Oregon. Here's the interesting thing. Yeah. If the seeds hold, you have an Oregon-Oklahoma Super Regional. And if Oklahoma advances to the Women's College World Series, their opening game will be against Florida.
And I think Oklahoma's that good. They have a big series awaiting them with Oklahoma State and all that. But what's unique this year is the Big 12 will have a conference tournament. It's a pool play. Oh, that's right. I didn't tell that. So, yes, the Big 12 will have a conference tournament. The 6 teams get in, not 7. So one team gets left out. And they're going to break them down into pools. And they're going to play 3 games. They're guaranteed. Everybody's guaranteed 3 games.
You know what it sounds like to me? You know how the ACC in baseball, they do that pool play and the 2 pool winners go to the championship game?
Yes, same thing.
Okay. Same thing.
That's what they're doing.
How do they determine the pools?
I don't have that in front of me, but you could Google that and find out. I believe they have it based on the seedings, based on where you finish in the conference. It's kind of breaking it down, you know, from that standpoint. So very interesting from that standpoint. And, you know, you look at the Big 12. Texas is a team in the bubble here, Vic. I mean, Texas just lost 2 out of 3 for the first time ever in the history of Texas softball. They just lost 2 out of 3 to Iowa State. And this is, again, part of the frustration, I think, with some people in the sport. If somebody else loses to Iowa State 2 out of 3, that would be considered a bad loss that could knock you out of postseason. Texas RPI at 34 maybe gets away with it. We'll see. I think they're in the bubble, though. I think Texas has got some work to do down the stretch. So Oklahoma, Baylor, Oklahoma State are in. I have Texas in, but I have Texas as the last 4 in. So that's the story in the Big 12, and maybe the Big 12 tournament can help Texas get some quality games and improve that RPI. I think that's part of the theory why they're going with the pool play. That's always been the
thing. Well, here's the problem. Texas right now, they're 5th in the conference, but they lost 2 out of 3 to Iowa State, who had 1 win in the league coming into that weekend. So Texas better be careful.
I agree. They got some work to do. There's no question about it in the next few weeks for the Texas Longhorns after losing for the first time in school history to the Iowa State Cyclones, a team that's up and coming. But still, that's not going to be looked at very well in Austin, and we'll see how that affects them moving forward. You know, they got to pick it up a little bit here and get some wins here, or they could be sweating it out on Selection Sunday.
Yeah, they're sweating it out on Selection Sunday. A lot of heads could be rolling.
Well, and again, it goes back to the Power 5 versus the non-Power 5 arguments, and that's where we're headed with this. I'm telling you, we're headed to a collision And I think it will divide some people in the sport.
Yeah, it's sad.
So we'll see. What else you got for me? Are we any other questions you got?
I think we're good for D1.
All right, so that is it. That's our D1 thoughts on the Projection 64. Certainly check it out, as well as our D2 thoughts. We'll do this again in the immediate future.
Yes.
We'll keep you posted, and where you can keep updated with us is where, Vic?
You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at InTheCircleSB. Of course, you can subscribe to our podcast on Podomatic and iTunes and send us an email, InTheCircleSB@gmail.com. And before we go, Eric, the MPF draft
took place
this past week.
Yeah.
Did a little bit of tweeting with Justin McLeod. My computer, kind of like the live feed, has some technical issues, but we pressed on nonetheless. Jessica Burroughs went number one overall to the USSSA Pride. No surprise that she has connections with Pride head coach Lonnie Alameda.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of saw this coming, right? We said this in the preview. I mean, it's a good choice. I mean, the Pride needed another pitcher, so Burroughs has had a great career at Florida State, so it makes sense. They get Alex Powers later in the draft, so you know, it makes a lot of sense to me. I don't have a problem with it.
Now, the one I kind of caught me by surprise, Sarah Gronewagen going to the Akron Racers at number two.
Yeah, they went Big Ten theme, I believe. Megan Betza they drafted later in the draft.
Yeah,
so
Megan Betza.
Yeah, I mean, with Sarah, obviously, she's got Canadian national obligations, so we'll see how much they can use her. But, boy, she's a tremendous player. I don't have a qualms with that. Obviously, they'll figure it out. But you still got Jalen Ford there. You know, maybe get her for the stretch run, depending on what happens with international competition. And, hey, you know, you could become a force in the postseason.
Now, I really like what Chicago did with their draft. They got Jake Wish from LSU and Hyland from Kai Poly in the first round. Turn around, got Danielle O'Toole from Arizona in the second round. Of course, she has commitments to Team USA. So Chicago, with those picks, really went for players that they can rely on, especially with Jaquish and Highland. That could be a nice battery for the Bandits.
Nice arm, too, Highland. I've known her very well. Pitched great at Cal Poly, the ace. Chelsea Barkley coached her up before moving on to North Carolina, the pitching coach. So, yeah, Bandits trying to retool with those young players, and you know, should be fascinating. I mean, yeah. No question about it.
Now, another team that made some noise, the Scrapyard Dogs. They didn't pick until the third round, because of the Monica Abbott trade, got Gourley from Florida, and then flipped her to the Texas Charge for Ali Aguilar and MJ Knighton. So that's a nice pick. So that's a nice job by the Scrapyard Dogs to get somebody who they know is going to be a part of Team USA, flipped her, got some more assets in return. And if you're Texas, you got Gourley now with Hager, those two former Gators. So there are going to be a lot of Texas Charge fans based out of Gainesville this summer.
No question about that. They'll be following that closely. And again, Gourley is with the U.S. national team. So when does she the playing time will be very interesting. But Certainly a very unique and interesting draft as always, for sure.
It is. And by the way, we like our former guest of ours, Jen Schroeder, her younger sister, Nicole Schroeder, drafted by the Akron Racers in the fifth round with a 21st pick. Morgan Zirkel, Miss Irrelevant, if you will, the last pick by the Scrapyard Dogs.
Well, and again, I think the only reason why she lasted that late is because of her. Right now, she's on the U.S. team, so that's really probably
You know what the interesting thing is about this whole draft? We didn't hear Casey Cooper get drafted.
Yeah.
And of course we're not ones to speculate. So maybe she's not interested in the MPF, or teams didn't think too highly of her. So
I would say it's the she might not be interested. I would, because how can you not be interested in her? Now I don't know what her future commitments are to softball. Maybe she's done playing softball. I don't know what she wants to do. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I know for a fact I followed this throughout the years. Usually teams will ask you, are you interested in playing? And if you're not interested in playing, you take your name out of it.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what happened. I have no idea.
And that happens with players that a lot of people think would have been drafted highly. You know one personally, Mackenzie Otis.
Yeah.
He was going to be drafted very highly.
Correct.
A couple years ago.
And but she didn't want to commit to playing professionally. She had other interests, so that's kind of what happened. So, I agree. That was interesting for sure. And maybe she just, like I said, look, man, it's tough to make a living in pro softball. So, some players just want to kind of get away from it, not be as involved on it.
And I think more than ever, we're seeing more than ever there, you can still be involved in the game. You can be involved as a coach. You could be involved giving lessons. You could be involved in a broadcasting role. So there are different ways to stay connected to the sport than it was, say, 15, 20 years ago, without having to play the game professionally.
And you might be focused internationally.
Yeah.
Or, U.S., that's a strong possibility, too. I mean, that's the thing. She got selected to the U.S. national team for a second straight year, so she might just be focused on that. Might say, I have no interest in splitting time.
Yeah. Have her focus on Team USA, which we commend her.
Among others, yeah. So there's a lot of reasons. A lot of reasons, for sure. But that's, time will tell how they play out. All right, that'll do it for this edition of In the Circle. For Victor Anderson, I'm Eric Lopez. Reminder, just keep it here for the latest softball news in the Circle.